This is the Money Talks Podcast with Michael Campbell.
Welcome to the Money Talks Podcast. My name is Michael Campbell. You know when someone in the media says it's a must listen? Well, I'm saying that today for good reason. Jim Dines is one of the true legends of the investment market. He's got this fantastic reputation for his uncanny ability to predict coming investment themes. Today, in his only interview of the year, he's going to share his shocking predictions for what's coming next and what the implications are for the massive debt buildup. I mean, the coming bond market crash, and most importantly, what you can do to protect yourself and profit from what's coming next. It's my money-back guarantee. Your time's worth it with Jim Dines. But first, just allow me to clarify something. I don't like to talk about politics. But given the degree to which politics and government have permeated economics, finance, and investments, it's impossible not to, at least to some degree. For example, taxation's our biggest expense. Come on. It's the biggest cost component of gasoline, of new housing, of beer. I could go on, but my point is it's impossible to talk about economics, finance, and investments without overlapping into politics. I mean, the big problem, though, is that so many people who are into that stuff, who support strongly one party or another, are often nasty, at times irrational, and are so willing to compromise their principles in support of their political favorites. Maybe the best summation I can just offer personally is I don't want to be in a relationship with any of them, because the odds are massive. If you displayed that lack of integrity in your personal or your business relationships, well, things aren't going to go well. Now, I do appreciate that many disagree, and I am absolutely not trying to change anyone's mind, so relax. But I will say, I'll bet big time that the lack of integrity is going to bring the system itself down. Everything from healthcare to the financial system. I mean, actually, it already is. Confidence in so many areas, from policing, what about the value of paper currencies, to the education system. Well, it's declining. Now, if you don't agree, how about a little bet? I say within 2 years, there's going to be a monetary crisis, and your favorite politicians aren't going to be able to solve it. In fact, they're creating it by trying to solve the current debt problem with more debt, the creation of trillions of dollars out of thin air, the manipulation of interest rates by central banks without doing any cost-benefit analysis. That's what gold's reacting to. That's why we featured gold to kick off the World Outlook Conference this year. Why? Because you recognize that confidence is leaving government. It's leaving paper currencies. And gold and silver are already the beneficiaries. And that's why I'm so pleased today. We've got Jim Dines. And this guy is one of the true legends of the investment business. And it's going to be his only radio appearance this year anywhere. But first, let me spend a couple of words, about the We Charity scandal. Again, I'm going to leave questions about the politics, about the conflict of interest and any other political fallout to others. I want to talk about how our tax dollars are spent. And it's interesting, that hasn't been front and center. I appreciate the political drama is probably more interesting. But what we've heard confirms the worst of the Auditor General's reports that chronicles mismanagement, negligence, and a culture in the federal civil servants that, in the words of the late Auditor General Michael Ferguson, seeks to avoid responsibility. Now, I understand that majority of people actually don't seem to care about how effectively our tax dollars are spent. They don't seem, care about waste. But personally, when I see the needs of groups of people like those with intellectual disabilities, the homeless, foster children, and others who make up the most vulnerable in our society, when I see that there's a lack of funds to help them, I can't stand by why literally billions are being wasted. Specifically, when it comes to the Student Volunteer Employment Program and the hundreds of millions awarded to We Charity Foundation, by the way, an entity without any assets, literally having never done a thing. My question is, what would it take to get somebody fired? There was woefully inadequate due diligence done. No serious questions were asked before awarding hundreds of millions of dollars. Think about this. In March, head of the Board of Governors, along with many other board members, resigned. We Charity fired 400 employees. They canceled what are called the We Days. And no one in the bureaucracy or cabinet thought to ask the just resigned board chair, Michelle Douglas, why she resigned? I mean, anywhere else, that would be the starting point for due diligence. I think anywhere else, that level of incompetence would be met with a pink slip. The bureaucrats in charge and the cabinet members who all voted in favor of awarding hundreds of millions of dollars to We Charity Foundation, basically a shell entity, didn't take 5 minutes, pick up the phone, and ask Michelle Douglas why she resigned? That's standard in examining any organization or company. Because no matter how lazy, how partisan, how clueless, there is no way that contract would have been awarded if they knew that the board members resigned because they had repeatedly asked for financial information and never received any. That would have been a dominating red flag. When the Prime Minister stated Thursday in his testimony to the Finance Committee that on May 8th, he says he slowed the process down to award the contract to We Foundation in order to do more due diligence. And by the way, May 8th is 3 days after they'd already given the We Foundation $30 million in advance. But in the following 2 weeks, Cabinet voted on, I think it's off the top of my head, it's May 22nd. So 2 weeks later. What was the follow-up? What did actually anybody do to further their due diligence? They certainly didn't talk to any board members. It wasn't to read We Charity's audited statements because they clearly stated that it was in breach of its bank covenants. That should have begged a question. You know what? There's not even a sign that they knew the money wasn't going to We Charity and instead was going to We Charity Foundation. Again, the shell company, no assets, no operations. To not put too fine a point on it, nothing remotely approaching adequate due diligence on spending hundreds of millions of tax dollars were done. And that doesn't matter if you want to excuse it, who you vote for, whatever. Because I'll tell you this, in the private sector, that would cost someone their job. More concerning, though, is why should we think it's any different with tens of billions more in spending? All you have to do is read an Auditor General's report. Check out military procurement, regional development, Indigenous affairs, the billions spent on innovation. Just check it out. Read them. Maybe that's why the federal Liberals are denying funds to the Auditor General's office. But I'll tell you, there's so many questions there. But don't tell me proper due diligence was done in the awarding of hundreds of millions of dollars. Michael Levy joins me on the line now. Mike, obviously, we're going to spend a lot of time today talking with Jim Dines on gold, on silver, on that move. You're doing it hands-on, of course, on a daily basis at Border Gold and BorderGold.com, looking at it. You know, let me just ask on that, have you had a chance to talk with Rob about how busy they are?
Well, they are, Mike, and the landscape has changed somewhat. Still very, very busy. I mean, this is five straight months of over-the-top increase activity. But there's a bit of a sea change here. Still lots of people buying, not afraid to buy at these levels, feeling, just like you said in the editorial, the devaluing of paper currency. Well, if you devalue your paper currency and debase your paper currency, people are looking for a store of value, so that's where gold comes in. But what we're seeing now is a bit of a two-way market. People who have bought in years previous a lot have the state of mind of, I'm not going to sell till I can get my money back. Yeah. Others are saying, good, it's on its way. But those who want their money back or want to sell, so we're seeing this two-way market. But it's not big. The selling end of it is not big by any stretch.
I just cringe thinking of someone whose criteria is, you know, I bought it too high, you know, 10 years ago, and now I'm going to finally, when you get a breakout, sell. That is not the way to go about it.
It sure isn't.
Yeah, but it's interesting to hear you say that, though. It's interesting to hear you say that's actually happening also there. I agree completely that you come back to all of it and you mix it in a potion there and it comes out, you know, with paper currencies being on one end of it. That's a huge consideration. You know, for example, I noticed that, for example, gold hadn't made a new high in euro terms. It was back in April. But the euro's been stronger, you know, in U.S. dollar terms. Canadian dollar, yes, of course. Aussie dollar, yes. So it's interesting. The currencies are really playing a big part here.
Oh, it really is. And I love this Bloomberg headline. I just pointed that out to you earlier in the week. But it's a great headline and really underlines a lot of what's going on. Forced into record spending by the threat of another Great Depression, policymakers are blurring the lines between borrowing the money they need and simply creating it. And boy, you can just underline that. And as long as this scenario carries on, and it's going to, Fed Chair Jerome Powell guaranteed, not almost guaranteed it, guaranteed it this past week. So they're going to continue to create, the central banks are going to continue to create money. And they don't have there's no value behind it if you continue to create it, but you're not growing the economy, you're not growing the country, and subsequently you've got currency that's worth less and less. It's going to have less purchasing power. There's going to be inflation. That's going to happen, and people are turning to gold, and they're being a lot more thoughtful this time than back in 1980. By the way, I was there when it hit $800 an ounce, Mike. Back in 2007 when it hit $1,923.70 an ounce. This week when it hit $1,981 an ounce. This is not stopping, Mike. This continues to carry on because people get it.
Well, Mike, I got to leave it at that. I've got Jim Dines coming up to talk more about that. Great stuff. Go out and have a fun long weekend here.
And, Mike, thank you. And, boy, am I looking forward to Jim Dines. I have followed him since we've been together on this show for 30-odd years, so it's going to be a great morning.
Victor Dare joins me live from the trading desk. Vic, I want to come back to the U.S. dollar, just chatting with Michael Levy about it. Obviously, currency's playing a part in the gold move. Jim Dines coming up in just a couple of minutes' time. But I know you've been writing about this in PolarFuturesGroup.com, that we're in a period of weakness for the U.S. dollar. Of course, the inverse is strength for gold.
Well, the U.S. dollar, Mike, had its worst month in a decade in July. It was down over 5% to a two-year low. You know, you go back to the, call it the middle of March, when everybody was freaking out. The stock market was falling like a stone, and capital just rushed into the safety of the U.S. dollar. And then once the Fed came out and the government in the United States came out with basically a whatever it takes to fix the problem program, the U.S. dollar began to fall, and it's down 10% since middle of March or late March. And the rate of change, in other words, the speed with which it was falling, seemed to accelerate as we went along, I think, until yesterday, the very last day of August, when the U.S. dollar actually got back a little bit here after falling so much. But in my notes at PolarFuturesGroup.com, I'm asking the question, why were U.S. dollars so aggressive during this period of time? And I give, let's say, a half a dozen reasons there, you know, not the least of which really was that, you know, the U.S. political and social scene was becoming increasingly dysfunctional. You know, and these are emotional markets, okay? So capital was getting out of the U.S. dollar, and certainly as the dollar fell, momentum kicked in, and, you know, and it was like dominoes falling. So we've had this very sharp move in a very short period of time, with taking the U.S. dollar to down, as I say, 10% from where it was in March.
Well, I'm first of all, I'm proud to say, by the way, that we recognized this trend as early as September in terms of the reaction to so many of these issues in gold, you know, with the crack in the overnight lending rates. And that's why at the at the World Outlook Conference, we actually featured, you know, commodities and gold to kick off the conference, which you hosted. That was the reason. You know, what we're seeing kind of develop right now, I'd encourage people to think this does not go in a straight line at all. You know, this is a trend we're talking about, but it's not a straight line thing when it gets translated into the investment markets. But I'm just interested, as I say, I think we've said on this show, Vic, for years that if I only could have one thing I could get right, it would be on the U.S. dollar. So when you see that selling of the U.S. dollar, is that a risk on or risk off kind of trade, do you think?
I think what we've seen here since the Fed and then subsequently other central banks came out and just opened the floodgates in terms of printing money, I think we've kind of had, let's call it a sugar high at least, where there's been this thinking that the debasement of the currency, so much printing going on out there that you want to own anything but cash. So people have been buying stocks, some stocks more aggressively than others, selling the U.S. dollar. But, you know, it's not just the United States that's been printing money. It's going on around the world. So from my perspective as a short-term trader, and I got to underline short-term and trader, I think this emotional rush that we've seen in the U.S. dollar selling is maybe run its course. I've taken some very low-risk limited risk, I should say, positions. And what I've chosen to do, Mike, is to sell short in the Canadian dollar and the Mexican peso, two of the currencies that went up the least as other currencies were going up against the U.S. dollar. In other words, I'm selling the weakest in the pack. And again, short-term trading, you know, and just because I think this thing has gone too far, too fast. We'll see.
I'll come back to something else you're just saying, though. Please disagree if that's the case. But I see even more volatility coming. I see the U.S. Election sort of period as we come into it and post-election going to be actually chaotic. When you talk about losing confidence, systemic confidence, I think we're there. These are the themes of Money Talks. And we're seeing it play out, in my opinion. And we're going to really see it in spades as we come into the U.S. election. And whichever group wins, the other group will not accept the results. I think these are really pivotal points to understand.
But I think there's exactly, Mike, there's so much, so many moving parts here. But let me go back to where I just started. When the stock market was crashing and people were worried like crazy, where did they go? They went to the U.S. dollar.
Yep.
And, you know, to think, here's my thought is, if we're really going to have crazy times, you might find that the U.S. dollar gets bid, as opposed to everybody can't get out of it fast enough. You know, we'll see, you know. there's a lot of things going on here. Certainly the idea that, you know, the virus is spreading much faster in America because of political mismanagement, you know, that's in there. The interest rate premium that the U.S. dollar had over other currencies, that's gone. You know, everybody's at zero now. So, you know, what is the difference between owning a euro, owning a U.S. dollar, owning an Australian dollar? And it'll be an emotional decision.
Yeah, one of the key sort of intellectual exercises, I'll leave you with this, that I go through is, what's the world going to look like in 3 years? You know, I give it a little bit more time. Our scenario was we would get this bond rally that we've been in, you know, very clearly stated at the World Outlook Conference about 19 times, you know, that we would get this bond rally. My question was always, what comes next? Lots to talk about in the future. But in the meantime, go to polarfuturesgroup.com. polarfuturesgroup.com. See Victor's notes, see the charts. Great stuff to do on a weekly basis. Vic, have a terrific weekend and sit back and listen to the great Jim Dines.
I am looking forward to listening to Jimmy, believe me. Thanks, Mike.
I've been looking forward to this really for ages. And one of the great privileges I've had in doing Money Talks is being able to create a friendship being able to chat with someone like Jim Dines. This guy is a legend in the business, but it's for good reason. I'm just thinking of the books that have been so influential, so wonderful in part of my own personal education. I'm thinking about The Invisible Crash, an absolute classic. Mass Psychology, which is literally on so many people's list as the first book you recommend in understanding what's going on with the markets. And today we're going to focus on another book that he hid, but it's, of course, a theme. And that's The Original Gold Bug, the author of The Dines Letter, award-winning. I've got to keep going just for a sec before I bring Jim Dines on. This is the guy that, I'm doing this off the top of my head, that in 2000 said, you know what, you got an uranium bull market going. 2004, you've got a bull market in rare earths. Going back to 1989, he said, you better put China on your radar because the century of China is coming. The list is just so long, I'm having trouble keeping up with myself. The other one, again, that just immediately comes to mind, in 2014, Jim Dines, Mark Leibovit, saying, you've got to put the marijuana stocks on your screen. You've got to, and I remember it going, wow, that's quite an idea. Obviously, it worked out very, very well. The Dines Letter, you can go to thedinesletter.com. Let me bring on Jim Dines and first say with much thanks. I know this is the only radio interview you'll do this year, Jim, and I can't tell you how much we appreciate you finding time for us.
Mike, for you, it's my pleasure.
Well, this is...
I don't do public speaking anymore or interviews, but because I'm really devoted entirely to my newsletter and I really love doing it, but some things are happening now so compelling, I have to share them with somebody, and I'm choosing you because...
Well, I can't tell you. I'm thrilled with it. Let me just bring people up to speed a little bit. You wrote the book, The Original Gold Bug, but before that, I remember gold, $35 an ounce. That was the first phase of a bull market that you talked about. I remember the second phase on this show, 2001. Gold was about 250, I think, you know, in that range. you said, oh, next phase. And then, of course, you came, World Outlook Conference, you did it on our show, February 2017. You said, you know what? The third phase is now coming. You better start loading up. So I just thought maybe we could start, Jim, and I'll just let you go. Give us a little bit of the background on, you know, everything gold. I'm thinking of that first phase and second phase, for example, before I get to the third phase we're in.
Oh, boy, what a buildup. I hope I can live up to this. But, you know, I'll tell you something. I've made a lot of appearances on your show, but this, for the first time, I'm going to reveal my top recommendation of a gold stock. And if I have time, I'll squeeze in a low-priced silver and maybe even take questions from the audience. It's up to you. But before I do that, I want to make certain that you get your deserved credit. And among my thousands of career interviews, Mike, you've been my favorite, both for your intelligence, but your courage in allowing me to express some of my predictions that were pretty daring. And I have to confess, I'm jealous we don't have one like you in the States. So I just hope your audience appreciates you, Mike. And I thank you to you and your staff. Well, most see people as having a bullish or a bearish phase, but they miss the very big picture. And as one of the founders of technical analysis or charting, one of my secret discoveries is that major bull markets could also be connected. For example, as you pointed out, there was first a major bull market from $35 to $400. The second one was from around $200 to $1,900. And I call this linkage a super major bull market. It's a new phrase, super major. And it implies that, therefore, a third new major bull market for gold to an all-time high was inevitable. And last week's upside breakout, therefore, confirmed my theory that the third major bull market for gold has begun. So next will be far, far higher gold prices. Like, there'll be some short-term profit-taking, but higher. And all this year, my letter's been reporting nascent uptrends in the precious metals, gold, silver, palladium, even rhodium. And it's been confirmed by the mass psychological indicator I use called DWPAT, the Dines-Wolfpack theory, D-I-W-P-A-T. And finally, last week, the mass awakened as if from a dream to the fact that the price of gold has risen around 33% this year, while the S&P 500 average is now flat for the year. So I'm confirming on your show here now that my long-standing prediction that a gold would rise to $3,000 to $5,000 U.S. an ounce, and it's ahead. And furthermore, as the original silver bug, I confirm my prediction of the current $25 an ounce silver price to a conservative $500 an ounce, believe the unbelievable or not. And you could just imagine how high earnings are going to be for the miners. And I'm going to pick one gold stock on this show now, and maybe a silver if time allows. But the super major bull market resulted from the cutting of the link between gold and paper money. So with more and more American pesos printed each year, chasing each ounce of gold, I have to see gold rising inexorably. And unless the printing stops, the price of gold must go higher. And I ask, how much higher is even possible? And I look at Iran, the nation of Iran, but nobody there with gold would trade it for the soaring quantities of paper money. So there are no gold transactions, and the price of gold has thus risen to infinity. You've got to be crazy in Iran to trade paper money for gold. So in Iran these days, a gold could buy a lot of paper, but it will not be the last currency to befall that fate. And I think it's prudent for everybody to own some gold stocks. Then I pondered what could drive it. I pondered which chain of events could possibly drive the price of gold to $5,000 an ounce. In the States, just last week, our Federal Reserve printed $1 trillion to be distributed to the needy.
listen, these politicians, if you ask them how much $1 trillion is, they wouldn't even know. It's not the answer just for you. I'll give it to you if you want. But I want to make sure you understand clearly that my letter is not political. We make predictions for the future, the results, and whether we like them or not, just the straight truth of what we expect in the future. And it's the longest lasting newsletter of its type in the profession. So let's take an example, the bond market. And this is key. For example, now what's called daintily negative yield, the truth is instead it's a positive loss. When bond interest rates go below zero, you know, that's never happened. That's never happened before. As evidence, the most boring book I've ever forced myself to read was A History of Interest Rates from 2000 BC to the Present by Sidney Homer. And negative yields for a minus income to the unwise who buy them are right now, in fact, the lowest yields in recorded history. And what that says to me is clearly bonds are overpriced on a historic level. And I therefore hereby first predict on your show that bonds will go down in financial infamy with the tulipomania bubble. Also, John Laws, hyperinflation, and then the wrenching deflation that resulted in France's Napoleon Bonaparte. His first act was to have minted the gold coin eponymously minted called a Napoleon. And after that, prosperity again visited France. And that'll happen again in our countries. I insist a sound currency is a crucial element of lasting prosperity. That is obvious on the face of it. And now, which unwise people are buying these historically overpriced bonds? That's not a good question. It's not a secret. It's the U.S. Federal Reserve, and they admit it. It's quoted in the Wall Street Journal. And where's the Fed getting the money to buy the bonds? They're just printing the money. So what do corporations who sell the bonds with their proceeds? Some of it goes to buying their own stocks to historic heights, so their stock options go up and they get rich. What will happen next? Institutions that pay pensions can't buy bonds that pay enough to meet their payments for the pensions. Insurance companies are going to stop selling life insurance for the same reason. The money they pay out comes from bonds. If bonds don't pay interest, listen, there's real trouble coming from these low interest rates. I don't think anybody's really taken a good look at this.
I'm absolutely thrilled to have Jim Dines here. Dinesletter.com. Dinesletter.com. Talking about the current environment here. New highs in gold kick off a new third phase of the gold bull market. The man who wrote the original Gold Bug, he wrote Mass Psychology, so many other things, The Invisible Crash, all of it coming to fruition here. Jim, just before the break, you were talking about, the coming crash in bonds, you know, matching like the tulip mania, that kind of thing with all the money printing, which has really been one of the questions on people's minds. And I'd like you to go a little further because, of course, that's the foundation of the next upleg in gold.
Yeah, that's right. I have to mention, you mentioned my book, The Invisible Crash. Something really funny just happened. And it was published by Doubleday and Ballantyne in 1975. For $10, and I'd forgotten all about it because it never really attracted much attention. But I have to admit, I was shocked to discover last week it's now for sale on Amazon for $143.
Yeah.
It's true. It's up 1,330%. It's better than the stocks I recommend. Anyway, I have no more to sell, but it even shocked me because the book explicitly, listen to this, in writing on page 38, predicted the date of when the coming second Great Depression would begin. It was to come in 2008. That was the date of the so-called Great Recession, one of my luckiest calls ever. That's right. The second Great Depression began in 2008 before the virus. So I have to chuckle. Is my book becoming an underground bestseller? And if so, am I becoming a cult figure someday? I have to laugh. Anyway, I really hope I'm somehow mistaken, but the truth is gold has made an upside breakout to an all-time high, and gold is openly being bought by governments, China, Russia, even by Japan. Maybe you should also. Meanwhile, business is so bad, people who don't expect to pay aren't buying. And it's no coincidence that interest rates are at their lowest in history, even while gold is at its highest in recorded history. And I've shared my reasoning for it's a curiosity. But the question is, when will the bond dysfunction end? And, I wrote the book on mass psychology, not personal psychology, but revealing how the mass around us affects our decisions. And the flight from bonds yielding less than nothing will be as sudden as last week's mass mind switching to gold. And I've already mentioned that insurance companies are going to stop selling life insurance or pensions. But the question is, where are these bond sellers going to put their cash proceeds? And there's a risk of a historic plunge in the bond markets worldwide. And the question, where is that cash going to go as I study? So here's my next prediction. But first, I have to do something, Mike, just to give you a bit of credit here. You allowed me to recommend Agnico Eagle on this show, even though the company was out of favor because Paul Penna once stored his company's ore rather than selling it around $35. And I phoned Paul and we became friends. Again, Mike let me recommend internet stocks. He didn't mention that as the original internet bug, although he himself was a little uncertain when I said the new advice called an internet would change the world. And I was the first to recommend Amazon stock around $5. Yep. It's now $3,000. Mike also permitted me to predict the coming end of the age of travel when nobody believed me and no other reporter would quote me on it, yet it now exists. And I now predict gold. I now predict travel will never again be the same. Every time Mike trusted my judgment, I came through for him. And now I'm predicting the coming physical immortality. And I don't think anyone in the world agrees with me on that yet. But anyway, he who is first always looks wrong by definition. So in my personal war games, I often ponder which scenario could justify gold at 5,000 an ounce or higher. And how could I justify that? I rule out a war because due to chemical and biological warfare, there will be no survivors. There's no point worrying about it. I call it the Alfred E. Newman method. But a currency crash, I call that a shout to the death, a flight from paper to safety. Where would it go? It's not going to go to bonds. It's coming out of bonds. Real estate could be taxed and can't flee. Stocks at these high prices, maybe some flight capital would go there. But where then? It has to go to wealth havens, which means gold, silver, and Bitcoin is what I've been recommending in my letter. And a key to the dimes, I was the original Bitcoin bug, and a key, I got into it when it was shady and people thought it was criminal. You've got to have guts to be first sometimes, more guts than brains. I certainly have that.
Just sitting here thinking during the break that our goal on Money Talks is to prepare you for the kind of things that are coming. I think we've done a brilliant job of that up to this point. Jim Dines is painting the picture that you must be aware of, the challenges, the opportunities within that. You can do more by going to thedinesletter.com, it's Dinesletter. D-I-N-E-S, dinesletter.com, Jim Dines. Also, mass psychology, invisible crash, gold, original gold bug, all of these things. Just create the educational framework for you to look at what's going on in these markets. Jim, before the break, we were talking about the precarious nature, obviously the credit markets, the bond markets, with gold being one of the recipients or the recipient and silver, I meant to add, of what happens when you have the fallout. And I know in your letter, you're also famous for producing not just your commentary, and by the way, very entertaining commentary, as I think people can tell, very entertaining commentary, but also you give a huge array of stocks. You give what the risk is, who they're meant for, the points you should enter, exit, that kind of thing. So I just want you to know I'll be shot if I don't give you a chance to talk a little bit about the couple of stocks that you mentioned earlier on in the show. But let me just allow you to continue on the scenario that we're operating under.
Well, the question is, which stocks do I favor and why? You know, in all the times I've been on your show, I've almost never given specific recommendations from the Dines letter, but I hope my subscribers forgive me for sharing a few. First of all, I like to drink upstream from the herd. I use mass psychology, so I pictured what a large investor or institution would look for in a gold stock. Very large reserves, integrity of seasoned management, and unbeatable model, on and on. And the one gold stock that fulfills that, for which institutions will someday bid sky high, is, in my judgment, Franco-Nevada. They do no mining. They lend money to miners in exchange for a repayment stream of money or ore. So it's a unique royalty gold company for safety. How high could it go? Well, you know, some high-tech companies these days are going for thousands of dollars a share. How much would an institutional gold stock be worth? You know, right now I'm holding a silver dish as a gift from my friends Seymour Schulich and Pierre Lassonde. At the time of the founding of Franco-Nevada, it reads, quote, "To James Dines, thanks for your great support," end quote. And, you know, that stock has risen from that founding $10 up 1,600% already to as high now as 170. And the only negative is the silver on my plate is eroding, revealing a base metal below it. So I gently chide Seymour and Pierre for their stinginess with their silver gift. That is just teasing. I treasure it. A second institutional blue chip will surely be Giant Newmont. I favor it jurisdictionally instead of mines in West Africa because I've been predicting ISIS would move west from the Middle East and south from Libya. And my favorite all-African gold is Sibanye, a veritable jewelry box of gold, platinum, palladium, and rhodium. I implored Sibanye's president to buy a silver stock early this year, silver company, some of them selling for pennies, but he didn't. And I can just say on him, the stock is at some geopolitical risk in South Africa, but I recommend it because I suspect that Ramaphosa will do a good job running the country. For a more aggressive gold growth stock, believe it, there is one. I'm going to share that one, Kirkland Lake. It recently acquired Detour and just yesterday announced good earnings. But that's been on my list for a while. And there are many more gold stocks in my supervised list, but I've always favored holding some gold coins. And the big news is I've decided to switch out of my own coin collection, that's a large one, to switch the proceeds into gold and silver stocks. It's going to be at a big sale next month by Heritage. Heritage is the world's largest in coins. And nobody ever really owns fine gold coins, Mike. You know, owners for centuries merely have been temporary custodians until they're sold to the next custodian. And some of these very old coins, one of mine is 2,000 years old, is just gorgeous and it's been nurtured all these years.
Man, has this gone by quickly with the great Jim Dines, talking with him about the environment we're about to, the environment we're in, the one that's coming, and what you can do about it. Jim, just before the break, I'm sorry, I apologize, I had to cut you off because I didn't want to get you midstream, and you'd promised us a silver play.
Yeah, I think I was talking about a low price silver. Oh, I don't remember now. You know, I've been through a lot of gold and silver bull markets, all of them, actually.
Yes.
And one thing I've learned is that there's a shift, a downgrade from the high price stocks to the speculative. So I think that's coming next, and it might have already begun. And there's one low price silver stock I've had my eye on, where we recently recommended it at $1.50, and it's already it's only tripled, and it's now around $4 or $5. But it's previously been as high as over $25 when silver was at $50 an ounce, and I'm looking for higher silver prices. So this one's got a lot of upside potential, and also I think that that I'd also, before I go, make sure you let me, give me a second or two to tell a joke. I like to tell something funny before I leave. But I think that some of these low price stocks now are going to have spectacular moves. The public has been sitting on the sidelines with this cash. They have no idea where to go. They're afraid, and they're going to go into these havens. And Mike, I'm telling you, you're going to see, you know, you and I have been through these low price gold and silver booms before. Mm-hmm. This one is going to take the cake.
Okay. You're teasing me. What's the name?
Hecla Mining.
There you go. Okay, Hecla. Wonderful.
Hecla, that's my baby. I've made big money on that in the past, and we'll do it again.
You know, let me just, a couple of things. I want to give you time for that joke, but before we do, as we go forward, what's the biggest mistake you worry that investors are going to make, or the biggest pitfall they're going to ignore and then get killed for it?
Could you say that again? My biggest mistake was when?
Not yours. Not yours. You're looking at this environment. It's a dangerous environment. What are you just worried, most worried about for individual investors?
I'm most worried about is how many people are not even the people who don't intend to pay are not buying, mm-hmm. And then not realizing that. But my biggest mistake.
No, not your biggest mistake. I'm saying the public's biggest mistake. You spent your lifetime trying to protect people, your lifetime trying to identify opportunities for them. That's what I'm saying. I'm worried when you paint the picture that you've painted, which I completely agree with. I'm worried about it for individuals. And
I got the answer. It's in my mass psychology book. It's following the crowd. One of the elements, and I go through all of them in depth, is that we tend to agree with the people around us. And once they begin storming into something, it's almost impossible to resist it. And one of the points of the book is it's very important to dig your heels in and not follow the crowd. If they're all buying bonds, paying nothing, you don't have to do that. That is the biggest mistake you make. And all I can say is think for yourself. And, you know, you can look at it and say, a bond that doesn't pay anything? Hey, wait a second, that doesn't sound right, does it? Don't be afraid to ask a question like that. That's what I think.
All right, I think that's wonderful advice. And I love that, you know, we're living in an environment where people are not being allowed to ask questions in so many areas. And that's one of the fundamentals that we're seeing coming out of the response to the pandemic. We should be asking these questions, especially about the financial stability and the repercussions of the approach that they've taken. You've done that beautifully today. You do it in the Dines Letter, dinesletter.com. And let's finish off with, as you say, you're going to finish off with a joke.
All right, a man loses his wallet with $1,000 in it. Using the public address system in the restaurant where he lost it, he announced, "I'll give $100 to anyone who returns my wallet and the money." And a man at the next table said, "I'll give $200 and a free dinner." And that sums up the time.
Yeah, perfect. Look, Jim, before you go, let me just say, I can't tell you how much we appreciate this. And as you know, I appreciate it all over the years, the perspective, the wisdom, and the books, by the way. I mean, I remember reading The Invisible Crash back in the 70s, and I have reread it off the top of my head about 6 times. And I understand this stuff. Wow. I still reread it. And Mass Psychology, you know, Victor Adair and I talk about this all the time, what a pivotal book it was. So, look, the fact that you find time for us, find time for my audience, I can't tell you how much it's appreciated. And thanks so much.
Well, Mike, I tell you, I just hope your listeners always treasure and appreciate you and your staff. I thank you for having heard me out, and I wish every one of you good health, prosperity, and love.
Jim Dines, dinesletter.com, dinesletter.com. So much to digest with Jim Dines. Much to talk about. including things like, you know, his projection. Did you hear that? I remember in 2017 he came on and he was grabbing people's attention at the World Outlook Conference by saying, hey, guess what? That we could literally get gold, silver rather, at $100. And he says, and that's not my full prediction of it. I just thought that was kind of interesting. And today you heard that projection as much as $500. Well, how do you get there? You get there because of a currency problem. You get there because the purchasing power collapses. And it's not unusual in this way. Obviously, if you're sitting in Zimbabwe, if you're sitting in so many other emerging nations, and you're talking about the purchasing power of your currency, which has basically become worthless, well, one of the first things, you would much rather own gold or silver. So he's talking about a problem in the currency markets on that scale. What I find interesting is the work that I get to take advantage of the Armstrong economic confidence model. And we're looking at a 2022-ish monetary crisis. Well, that's exactly what Mr. Dines is talking about, coming at it from a different direction, that he sees that this will ostensibly be a currency problem. I talked with Michael Levy earlier today about that. Victor Adair and I chronicle it on a weekly basis, that it's going to come down to the currencies. And I'll just throw one more thing at you here, and that is, where do you think interest rates will be 3 years from now? One of the tenets that we've used on this show is that the only reason that interest rates are where they are is because of central bank manipulation. So the biggest question going forward is, how long can they manipulate interest rates at this level? And they're doing it, by the way, the Bank of Canada. If you think that the policies of the federal government have been expensive, the Bank of Canada has bought over $400 billion worth of government bonds. They buy it to keep interest rates down. That's what's happening in the States in terms of trillions of dollars. It's happening with the Bank of England. It's happening in Japan. The big question is, what happens if they lose control of that market? Well, that creates the environment of much higher interest rates, a collapsing bond market. I'm not sure one of the easiest five-year trends going out there is to bet that the bond market is going to go down dramatically. In other words, interest rates are going up. Not this year, maybe not next year. But that's what I think the monetary crisis is about. Our job, or my goal on this show, along with Ozzie Jurek, about Victor Adair and Michael Levy and the guests that we get on, and we get the best guests anywhere, just because I think I've been around long enough that you get to do that. But it's, again, to protect you. That's the bottom line. You can reject it or what have you. My job, as I've said many times, is to tell you about it before it happens, well before it happens. And I'm proud of the fact that on this show, very clearly, we said starting in mid-September that there would be a change in the stock market coming at the last week of January, a panic. We talked about this at the World Outlook Conference, a panic coming at the end of February, a bottom coming, and we use this straight out of the Armstrong Socrates model, a bottom coming March 23rd, and then some uncertainty. I still am in the camp that says you get another dip here. Might be wrong, but so far, so good. Time now for this week's Goofy Award. It's been astounding to watch the CBC, by the way, respond to accusations of political bias with efforts that seem to give even more ammunition to their critics. I mean, one of the most egregious examples came during last fall's federal election when the CBC, and they put their news host Rosemary Barton on it, a parliamentary reporter John Paul Tasker, on as plaintiffs to sue the Conservative Party because the Conservative Party used seven brief clips, but each clip had the CBC logo on it. This is not unusual what the Conservatives did. In fact, the Conservative Party did withdraw the clips before the lawsuit was even initiated. And the lawsuit came 11 days before the election. Come on, any hope of defending a claim that they're independent was dashed at that moment. And they're still at it. Last week, during an interview, the host of CBC's The House, it's called the program, David Cochran, he's interviewing Conservative leadership contender Aaron O'Toole. He asked him about his plans to change the CBC, to defund certain aspect of it and take those aspects private. Guess what? The CBC edited out the question and O'Toole's response. Now, they said it was a time constraint. Gee, what a coincidence. It was the only answer and question and answer taken out of the broadcast. Well, this week provided another vivid example, but it actually made me laugh out loud, and we need a good laugh. On Tuesday, the Kielberger brothers testified before the Commons Finance Committee. Now, come on, there was a ton of storylines that came out of that four-hour Q&A. For example, they claimed that Margaret Trudeau wasn't paid nearly $500 million in fees and expenses to speak. Instead, they said it was more like a meet-and-greet stuff. Then, right after, a specific invoice was presented from her saying, pay me for speaking on one of the wee days. That was by CanadaLandShow.com. Then there was the refusal to answer when asked if they or anyone associated with charity had hired private detectives to surveil journalists. Well, they also admitted the government contract, you know, I mean, that's got to beg some questions. They also admitted that the government contract had been given to We Charity Foundation. That should have also begged some things. All of that kind of stuff. You know, I mean, the list went on. Lots of storylines. You know what the CBC put as their headline on that one? It was incredible. We Charity co-founders say they took on student grant program to help, not make money. Wow. I just shook my head on that one. The other goofy's got to go very quickly. The elitist attitude that we see. Not do what I say, or do what I say, don't do what I do. Rules are for them, are not for them. They're for little people. With that in mind, the other goofy goes to Health Minister Patty Hajdu, who, while preaching the need for us to stay home, she was saying this as recent as last week, but Blacklock's reporter reports she flew four times during the lockdown, twice more when Ontario moved to stage two. Six round trips to her home riding in Thunder Bay, $73,000 plus to the taxpayer. She rationalized that by saying she had to attend a radio interview and join an online community meeting. Are you kidding? The operative word is online. You do it from home, just like this radio interview. All of this stuff. I just find it incredible, the lack of leadership when it says, you know what, leaders should walk the walk, period. She deserves the goofy. That's all the time we have. Please share with us on mikesmoneytalks.ca and Michael Campbell's Money Talks on Facebook. Make sure other people listen to Jim Dines. Have a great long weekend.
Subscribe to the Money Talks with Michael Campbell podcast for free at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you get your on-demand audio. For the complete show, daily podcasts, and more.